Okay. Our final presentation today. We have co-presenters again, and the title of this presentation is Longwall Automation: Ambition Across the Years and Hemispheres. Our two presenters, Steve Bessinger with Anglo American Coal and James Sudworth with Joy Global. Steve is the General Manager, Design, Engineering, and Maintenance for Anglo American. And prior to that, he's based in Queensland now. Prior to that, he worked with San Juan Coal with BHP. And prior to that, he worked for Joy Global. James Sudworth, he is the global CNA manager for Longwall Systems with Joy Global, and he has worked with Joy for 11 years now. So how about a warm welcome for these two gentlemen.
Well, good morning here. We'll see if we can get teed up for the... What we're going to talk about a little bit is longwall automation. It's been a subject that's been the focus of a lot of attention over the years. In fact, as far back as 1959, the National Coal Board in the UK started a project called Rolf, Remotely Operated Longwall Face. It was a proof of concept project. They had the dream established of longwall automation, and we all sort of have something in our minds individually when we talk about what automation represents with the longwall. One of the issues, of course, is that we're all not necessarily thinking the same thing. So we need to reconcile that just a little bit, and we'll talk about some of that reconciling ideas and as we go forward. Of course, the media represented Rolf as a wonderful success. There was a royal commissioning ceremony, but ultimately it was unsuccessful because of the technology of the day was just unable to support such an ambitious undertaking. So now, 55 years on from that, you'd think that we'd have some substantial success, but we still don't live in the dream of longwall automation. After Rolf, instead of trying to go for integrated longwall mining systems, there were a lot of efforts that were focused on subcomponents where the thought was, well, we can make part of it work. We can make it work better. Wasn't a lot of effort put into tying everything together to make it this sort of seamless, manless, remote operation that everybody envisioned. There were significant improvements in powered roof supports, where we switched from manual control in shield with multiple shield operators on the face to electrohydraulic controls that operate more or less autonomously and are pretty much a standard across the industry now. Sure, technology improvements, that one of the biggest things was actually getting data communications that was reliable and of a sufficient capacity to allow all the information to pass both directions to and from the shearer in more or less a real-time fashion. And of course, the automated machine control itself, where you're able to control the horizon and the speed and direction of cutting. So with those two things, you had some notion that, well, we're starting to get systems independently capable, and then we'll figure out how to synchronize them. And then, of course, armored face conveyor control, we had developments, and I think Gareth Remington had a great presentation yesterday, one of the best I've seen for quite a few years, actually, on development of controls for the armored face conveyor. A lot of the efforts were around starting the conveyor and higher horsepower conveyors and greater capacity, because as we all know, everything's been about more tons, fewer dollars, and fewer people with the long wall. And then making chains last longer through chain tension management primarily. But these are all just focused sort of, dare I say, stab in the dark, unrelated kinds of technologies in terms of pursuing the dream. They all deliver value independently of each other and to some degree acting together. But they still haven't gotten to that vision of the long wall being able to be operated in much the same way that we see drones being operated today compared to manned flight. So something else was required to get back on the track to reunite this theory of how do we get to where we need to be and get the long wall to operate more or less autonomously without a significant human presence. Always will be some human presence, but it shouldn't really have a lot to do with the direct operation and control of the long wall if you live in the dream. So what we did was turn to a field outside mining called process control engineering, which has developed over the interval of 55 years there that we've been working on all of this. And process control engineering has some pretty well-established tenets that allow us to attack the problem in a methodical fashion. Sounds like it might be a complex thing, and probably everybody's going, oh God, please don't get into all the terrible details of this thing, because there are one or two people out there who probably know that if you ask me what time it is, I might just tell you how the watch works too. But what we do in simplest form is create a process map. And that process map really is just to go through and take everything that we already know about operating a longwall, because we do it successfully now, manually, or in some lesser state of automation. Create a process map that shows all the judgment calls, all the information that's required to make those judgments, all the control signals that we have to create, and the interactions between those things for a particular process. In our case, that'd be bidirectional longwall operation. Then we take a look at all these technologic capabilities that we have, and we compare what we have against what we need as a result of this process map. And that gives us our gap analysis. Now that starts to cut the problem down into fairly bite-sized pieces at that point, because then we're able to focus on specific areas where we need technology development. And then we can allocate resources, and most importantly, we can determine whether or not that's an area where we have a known solution or whether it's an area where there's no solution available. And those are quite a bit more complicated. The areas where solutions are possible, but they require the invocation of technology that we don't currently apply but exists, or possibly the development of technology that we might apply but apply it differently, comes down to basically time and money, time on the part of people generally, and money in terms of technology, and to some extent money and time in terms of demonstration, because the other issue here is that coal mining vendors can't really develop the technology in isolation, because you really can't simulate a longwall mining system adequately outside the mining environment. So you end up having to actually get some allocated time from somebody who operates a longwall to do that final bit of proving and development. So going ahead with that, you implement, prioritize what tasks need to be implemented, implement them, and then evaluate how they worked, and if more was necessary, then you'd proceed on. But what this does is breaks the whole process of long wall automation down into one that's simple enough that we can actually put resources and costs against what it takes to get us from where we are to where we want to be. Because, you know, in the time that we've been working on this issue, we've seen, for example, aviation go from manned flight to very successful unmanned flight. And our situation is arguably a little bit more complex than that, but we haven't made nearly the progress that they have, and that's where the potential lies. So having taken a stab at that with Joy, Anglo and Joy having a partnership, we've looked at our Moranbah North mine, which exists, and our Grosvenor mine, which is under development. And what you see is a summary of what we see as being a roadmap, somewhat simplified, to get us from where we are at Moranbah to where we want to be in the future. The today we're able to do UniDye operation. For those of you who aren't familiar with Moranbah North Mine, it's in the Gunyala Middle Seam, and we mine between 4 and 5 meters of coal. This creates some issues for us that are somewhat different than the problems that are normally encountered. Some of the issues include things like the situation where the shearer can actually come into collision contact with the roof supports, because horizon control departures that are acceptable at lower working heights have an exaggerated consequence at this high working height. We've done a lot of things with the what's called smart services, a strategy whereby with the data communication capability that we talked about, we now have data exported to a central location that's really an office environment where we bring all the data to the experts, do a lot of analysis, and then leverage the expertise that's available across multiple activities and multiple locations. So instead of having the experts go to the issue, the data and the issue effectively get exported to the experts, and that's been very successful for us. As we go through all this, we see that what we'd actually like to do is progress towards having a combination of tele-remote and autonomous operation from a unit that we're calling the Remote Operating Center, or ROC. And this will allow us to have a minimum number of personnel on the face at any given time, and the personnel that are there won't be directly controlling the production process. They may be engaged in a maintenance or some other support task. They may be engaged in inspections, regulatory matters, but they won't necessarily be operating the mining system. And that's the goal that we hope to achieve. And then as we go through that, we expect to see gains in both productivity and safety. What you see here, and we'll come back to that, James will come back to the functional attributes of that journey plan in a few minutes, but what we see here is an evaluation of the safety consequence that we believe will be associated by achieving that journey, where our Moranbah North mine, we currently believe, sits about in here, where we have high risks with high potential consequences in this corner, and low risks with low potential consequences down here. So we've moved from approximately here to approximately here by invoking 102 of the 103 safety-related enhancements that we've identified. And then we've moved from here to here by going to operation from the remote operating center and taking people completely out of the hazards that are associated with the immediate area of mining on the longwall face. So with that, let me go ahead and switch over to James, and he can talk a little bit toward the details of what's going on to support all that. That's good.
Before I start, I need to make an apology. If you can't understand my accent, you're not on your own. What is automation? I have a nice definition, although, but for me, automation is the controlling of a mechanical or manual process by an electrical means, and also removing the human element, the human intervention, because we are only human and we do make mistakes, whereas a computer will do a process repeatedly, consistently, whereas a human can and does make mistakes. So at JAW we have a vision. We want an autonomous longwall operation. However, the reality is different. We have a remote operation because we need to manage exceptions. As Steve mentioned earlier, we've been through process mapping exercises with Anglo, identified technology gaps, and we try to fill them gaps. And to do that, we have a stepped approach to introducing technology to migrate operators from the face to a remote location where it's safe to run the longwall. As you see on the top line, we've got Moranbah North, who are currently running a uni-die operation and also utilising simple automation. Supporting that, we have smart service personnel in a Brisbane office who are providing process control improvements, process mapping improvements, preconditioning monitoring, and adding value to the longwall operation. A step change for Moranbah will be bi-day operation with full gate end turnaround, utilising simple automation and also advanced shear automation, full face and in the gate end. But currently, we're using 5 operators on the face. We want to migrate that to 2 and hopefully to 1. As you see at Grosvenor, which is the green line at the top, we have a remote operating centre. UK call out of Rolf, we have Rock. This Rock is a non-FLP version of what we have in other mines. As you can see from the slide, we have 4 24-inch high-definition displays. These displays will be used by operators to look at images from the shearer and the area cameras on the roof supports. These will be used to monitor and control the longwall face. We have high-speed communications, as Steve mentioned, fibre optic through the trailing cable. We have broadband power line modems, we have Wi-Fi systems. So we've got a lot of communication, a lot of information going to and from the longwall face. What's going forward from there? utilizing infrared cameras to try to keep the shearer in the shearer in the seam. Also utilizing variable speed drive technology, which my colleague Gareth talked about yesterday. Again, utilizing our smart service teams in our remote locations to support the mine through these transitions. And then we have the final goal, where we have a remote monitoring station controlling the longwall and keeping operators out of harm's way. We have a plan. We have a journey. And that journey consists of four phases. We have face operations, which is where we stand today. We have five operators on the face and one person remotely monitoring. And we're using our base controls and automation. The next phase is face monitoring, where we start to remove operators from the face and controlling the longwall from the remote operations centre. And this is where we start to implement and use new automation features and functions. Step three is we're now remotely monitoring the face and removing further operators from the face. So we have two on the face, kind of managing exceptions and doing other tasks, while we have two operators at the rock area controlling and monitoring the longwall. And then we have the dream, where we have no operators on the face and everything is being remotely controlled and monitored out by. All these features are supported and underlined by smart services. We have to manage exceptions, and we use change management to implement new technologies, new features, new hardware. So, migration to remote operation, phases one and two. What are we going to use to get to that point? Well, we need to use advanced shear automation and realise the value. We want fully automated faces running gate end turnarounds. We want consistent operations, consistent cutting heights, haulage speeds and cut sequences. And we'll see benefits in productivity by adopting these technologies. We also have automated face alignment, where you optimise your productivity and you're reducing your downtime. And this can be done automatically, pass to pass. And again, we are getting improvements in productivity. Phases three and four. We need environmental awareness of the longwall mine. We have systems that can detect and correct for anti-collision events, as you can see the guy on the left is doing. We have strata control or strata monitoring or management, where we can predict if we're going to get any cavity events and take the appropriate measures. And we want improved visualization through camera technology, through 3D visualization, to 3D modelling of the face and detecting the pitches and rollers in the face and giving that operator that awareness he would have while on the face. And then we have the rock. Now, the rock you see here is an FLP version. And like I said earlier, with a lot of work with Anglo and Steve pushing boundaries and getting us to, you know, rethink our processes, we've actually developed a non-FLP rock with a lot more visualization and control. But by adopting the rock methodology, we're actually reducing the exposure to our operators on the face. And to help to do this, we need a fully integrated communication system, like I mentioned earlier, through fiber optics, through broadband power line modems, and Wi-Fi communications. And this all goes to supporting the zero harm mentality. I'm living the dream, or I'm realizing a dream. It's a technical error. What this was a demonstration of the rock that was located out by on the belt, on the monorail. And you have basically two operators. The methodology we're adopting is to have a single operator controlling the lead drum of the shearer. Well, not controlling, managing exceptions, where he's utilising full advanced shearer automation. The second operator would be looking at the roof supports, the AFC systems, the switch gear, the pumps, and also making any corrections that needed to be made. This system is being used in a number of operations around the world. Samwon for one, where Steve once resided, and also in a new mine in Norway at Stornorsk, where we're starting to implement this technology, and it's seeing great successes. Any questions?
Two questions. First for Steve. Steve, you showed the risk matrix, and you could see the path that we're taking with the Grosvenor and also with Moranbah. Do you ever feel that we'll get back to the one rating of risk, right into that bottom left-hand corner, very low risk, with this technology?
Just to repeat the question there in case it, for the benefit of other folks in the room, do I think we'll ever migrate all the way down to the low risk, low severity corner of the matrix that was shown around safety? I think the answer to that is actually probably not, at least not anytime soon, because to do that would actually take us to risk levels that are probably lower than attending this conference. So you're at more risk now than what would be reflected of being at that level, because you can get hit by a cab, you're in unfamiliar surroundings, you can get food poisoning. I mean, there are all these things that can happen to you when you travel, right? So the answer is no on that, but what we have seen is fairly profound, because if you look over the years, risk tolerance has changed downward consistently, and about every 10 or 15 years, safety improves enough that we move across one boundary into another. And as a consequence, we tend to redefine what those categories mean. What's significant about this effort is that by planning ahead and thinking strategically, we've made a step change in safety where we've improved by an entire risk category in one event, not in a 10 or 15 year evolutionary process. And that's what the rock really has to offer when we realize the dream.
I And another question for James. James, do you see the technology that that we're implementing for Grosvenor? Do you think that can be rolled out throughout the world to other mines as well?
You're only allowed one question, Gareth. To answer your question, yes, and like I mentioned earlier, we are actually rolling that technology out now. I made reference to Stornorsk. That is utilising a lot of the technology I've already spoke about. There is still gaps, as we have identified through our process mapping exercises, and we need a robust plan in place to identify what them technology needs and then roll them out going forward for future longwalls, because we're all driving towards that zero harm mentality and a fully or semi fully automated longwall system. So yes, it's on our roadmap and that's our goal. Any other questions? Thank you.
Okay, that concludes this morning's session. As I mentioned earlier, we had the luncheons and the award presentation starts at noon. And then this afternoon, we have a panel discussion kicking off at 2 o'clock. So we'll close it for now and catch up with the gentlemen later. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep.